Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, where we explore all aspects of ending relationships, separation, and parenting apart. If your marriage or partnership has ended, or you have friends and family who are separating, this podcast is for you. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor, divorce specialist, and co-founder of Amicable, the online legal service for separating couples. In each episode, we look at relationships and separation from different angles, including the emotional, legal, and social. I'm joined by experts and special guests who share their own unique stories, experience, and tips with the goal of helping people end relationships in a kinder and better way. In this episode, I was joined by Christina McGee, an internationally recognised divorce parenting expert, speaker and author, to talk about parenting apart. With over 25 years experience, Christina has been featured across TV, radio and podcasts, including The Times, Channel 4 and the BBC. We begin this episode by exploring the emotional journey of children when their parents separate. Christina explains how emotions may vary between children, and when to seek professional help, particularly with sadness and anger. We discuss how to talk to children about separation and agree on the importance of using the word divorce. Christina gives some really great tips on how to reply to questions your children might ask when you're struggling for an answer. I was really interested in her guiding principles that help the parenting apart journey, regardless of how amicable your separation is. We finish this episode by looking at how to cope with parents' different personality types, especially if one parent's behaviour isn't consistent and is leading to tension or conflict. This is a great episode for Parenting Apart Basics, and it's full of practical tips and advice. If you loved this episode, then please subscribe and rate us on your preferred listening platform. Welcome, Christina.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's really lovely to have you. And thank you very much for making the time to talk to us today. I guess that one of the most kind of traumatizing experiences you can have as a parent is worrying about the impact that your separation or divorce is going to have on your kids. So it's lovely that you can join us. And it's great that you can share some tips and reassure parents who are going through this that all is not lost and they can have happy and thriving children. So I'm really excited about, you know, listening to some of those tips and uncovering that today. So thank you. I guess we talk a lot about the emotional journey in divorce and separation. And usually we mean for the parents. But I guess I'm wondering, is it the same for children? Do children go on their own emotional journey? And is that the same, like the bereavement curve we experience as adults?
Well, I think certainly it's the same in that we have to remember that divorce is a crisis in the life of a family, you know, and it's about change. And it doesn't just change one thing, it changes everything for children, and stress, you know, change is inherently stressful, right? So what happens for children is they go through the same process of grieving and loss. And while we're all going through it as a family at the same time, it's important for parents to remember that each individual is going through it differently. You know, how children will experience that grieving and loss process may be very different. Even in families where you have multiple children, each child may experience it very differently. You may have one child that really responds to this big change in the family by being very angry. Another may shut down or withdraw. One may, you know, catapult themselves into being the perfect child and saying that everything's fine. And another may be very deeply sad and upset. So there's lots of different ways. And what complicates the process is that we have to kind of tease out and separate our own feelings about what we're going through as adults, our emotions, so that we can be fully present for our kids.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think one of the difficulties sometimes we experience as parents, as you say, is separating our emotions from that of our kids. And it's very easy as a parent, isn't it, to project how you're feeling onto a child and to see your emotions in the child. And really owning your own emotions feels like it's quite an important part of the process. I guess it's that analogy of putting your own oxygen mask on first, isn't it? You've really got to potentially get yourself into a good place in order to be able to do the best for your kids. Is that right? Is that necessary? Do you have to look at yourself first, or are there things that you can be doing even if you're very distressed and upset?
Well, I think there's always things you can do, but that analogy of putting the oxygen mask on yourself first is really so critical. So if I was going to offer a top tip to parents, the first thing would be, you know, it takes a village to get through this. And you really need to create that village for yourself. You need to find people who can support you through this process and support you well. So be discerning about who you bring into that circle. You certainly don't want to have friends or colleagues or family members who are going to, you know, fuel the flames and create and add to the drama. Those are not people that you need to have into your life. But you want to look for people who can help you stay grounded, who can help you get that outside perspective. I tell clients all the time, you know, it's hard to see the picture when you're in the frame. And so you're looking for people who are outside the frame of your life, who can see things that you might not be able to see in the moment, who can help you be less reactive and to really respond to what's going on so that you can be fully present for your kids, because you can't give your kids what you don't have. And so taking care of yourself, paying attention to your emotions is a really critical piece, especially in those early stages.
I mean, it sounds like that the emotional journey is very similar between children and adults, and a full range of emotions can be experienced. You mentioned some just now when you were talking about being angry or fearful. Are there certain emotions that would effectively raise a flag for you that you'd be really concerned about if you were a parent? Or is it just an individual journey and we just need to stay present and focused and ride the journey with our kids?
I think, first of all, it's important for parents to trust their gut. Right? You know your kids better than anybody else. And if you see your children engaging in behaviors or responding to situations in a way that's markedly different than they've ever responded before, right? You have a happy-go-lucky kid who always was really engaged with friends and activities, all of a sudden doesn't have that level of interest, seems quite withdrawn. That's something that would be concerning to me. So you're looking for changes. A lot of times kids aren't telling us how they feel. They're showing us how they feel. And so really staying, you know, in tune with how are our children behaving? How are they responding to situations? And is there a big difference in the way they were before? I mean, it's understandable that, again, divorce is a really big change in the life of a family, that it is going to have an impact on kids. But to what degree? And if you're seeing things that really seem very intense and it's continuing over a significant period of time, then that's when you may want to bring in some help to sort through that.
Just so people know, if they're listening, what would you define as a significant period of time? Because all kids can have outbursts or one-offs, can't they? And we shouldn't be running to, you know, the counselor or the psychologist every little thing. We can handle this as parents, and we've got to feel that we can. But what defines that critical period of time then where you actually think, actually, my child now is stuck and we need some extra help?
Yeah. So I would say when you're getting into like the 3 to 6 month kind of range, you might want to start taking a look at things. And the truth is, the first port of call, I would say, is not running your child to the counselor, the therapist, but actually for you to go yourself first. Because a lot of times when parents can connect with professional support, they can talk about some of the things that they're seeing, they can unpack some of their own feelings, they can do a better job of showing up for their kids and make really significant, important changes. A lot of times what kids need in those moments when they're struggling is for us to show up and to validate, to let them know that what they're feeling is understandable, it's normal, it makes sense. And we acknowledge that this is a really hard time and we're going to get through this hard time together.
I guess one of the tricky sort of lines then to walk is the difference between continuing to be a parent and parenting and having boundaries in place and allowing certain behaviors or normalizing certain behaviors during an upheaval or a traumatic time. Because I guess, you know, if I personalize it, I'd be really paranoid of, you know, like letting everything go and just saying, oh, it's fine, just do what you like. I understand you're having a tough time. But there's that line, isn't there, where you've got to like be the parent, turn up, be the parent, hold the boundaries, hold the discipline, but at the same time, be understanding and empathic to what they're going through and validate and acknowledge. Where is that line?
Well, it's a hard one to find sometimes. You really do want to have a balance between love and limits. But, you know, one of the misconceptions about validation, about communicating understanding, is that we're giving our kids a free pass. That's not it at all. And sometimes it may be that our children are feeling or thinking things that we don't agree with, that we see very differently. You can still validate and provide guidelines and limits. You can still validate and not necessarily agree with what your child is experiencing. You can say, oh, wow, you know, I can understand why you might feel that way. It's not the way I see it, but I hear what you're saying. And when you make this choice, here's going to be the consequence, right? So it's not about just give your kids carte blanche to feel any way they want. Kids need to know that life is going to be okay. And one of the ways that we communicate that to them is by continuing to be a family. And part of being a family isn't just loving each other to the moon and back. It's also about having limits and guidelines and structure and respect, right? And expectations. All of that is just as much a vital part of being a family as the love is.
So let's talk then a little bit about this journey people go on when they decide to separate with their kids. I guess the first thing, or maybe not in some cases, but one of the early things you have to do is tell your kids that you're separating or divorcing. So what's the form for that then? Is there a right way to do it? Are there some tips and things that we should all consider if we're in that situation?
Absolutely. I mean, the most important thing is you want to have a thoughtful conversation, not an impulsive one. And that requires putting a plan in place. And that is really my first recommendation, is that once you are, and this is an important piece, once you are 100% sure there's no turning back, right? This is the direction our relationship is heading in, then that's when you need to sit down and have a conversation, and ideally together, about how you're going to have that first conversation. So a lot of parents will ask me, you know, should we be having the conversation together? What should we say? Is that the best option? And I think it is when both parents can provide similar messaging and have a supportive conversation with kids. However, that's if you can keep it tension-free. That's if both parents can responsibly manage their own emotions. If you have very differing opinions, or one parent is really focused on blaming the other parent, or one parent is extremely emotionally vulnerable, then you're probably better off having separate conversations. For the vast majority, a joint conversation is appropriate and doable. And so sitting down and really thinking through, what do you want to say to your kids? How are you framing this decision? And also letting them know, thinking through what's going to change and what's staying the same. What are the things that are going to be important to your children that they're really going to want to know? And a lot of that is based on their age and stage of development.
Yeah, because a lot of time it's some of the real small things, particularly younger kids, are really focused on, isn't it? Who's going to pick me up from this? Or will I be still sleeping in my bed? And those sorts of things. And I guess the difficulty with that is sometimes as parents, when we're telling them, we might not yet have all of the answers. So is it okay to say, I don't know?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, because you can't have all the answers. I mean, even with the most well-planned, thought-out conversation, your kids may hit you with something you simply didn't think of. And I think it's fine to say to kids, you know what, we're still working that out. And when we figure it out, you'll be the first to know, right? So give them the opportunity to understand that this is a process and you're thinking things through and you might not have the answer, and that's okay, but do make sure that you circle back to them within a reasonable amount of time. Don't leave kids hanging and wondering, because the uncertainty, the lack of information, tends to increase children's anxiety, not decrease it. And a lot of times as parents, we make the mistake of thinking, well, if we just don't talk about it, it'll be better for the kids. If we don't bring it up, keeping them in the dark is like the best way. I've had clients that have literally gone through the entire process and not told their kids about it until it was all done and dusted. And it really hit them hard.
I think it's hard then, because it makes kids feel like the last few months have just been a bit of a lie in some weird way, haven't they? They haven't been living a real life. And I guess the deceit must impact kids as well, in the fact that this has been going on, it's massive, and there's a sort of almost a lack of trust from the parents to think that the children can cope with it. Whereas actually what we know is if the kids are really well supported, they are resilient and they do cope with things, don't they?
Well, I think one of the problems is, even though parents may be well-intended, a lot of them engage in this kind of behavior because they're wanting to protect their kids, right? Talking about it's going to make it worse somehow, when actually it's the opposite. It's the talking about it that helps kids. More often than not, you know, kids know more than we think. They pick up on the tension. They pick up on the, you know, subtle comments and the fact that we're not making eye contact. They catch that, you know, maybe sometimes they're have a front row seat to a row between parents. I mean, there's lots of different things that kids get exposed to. And when we're not talking about it, then kids are left to make sense of that all on their own. And kids have some wild imaginations, and they start piecing together things that they've experienced and creating kind of the story of their own to explain what they're experiencing. And that's why it's really important that once you've made that decision, really having that big talk with kids. And I want to say that that first conversation is not a one and done. Right? It's the first of many conversations that are going to be unfolding over time. So buckle up and get prepared. You know, keeping those lines of communication open with your kids is really, really important, because if we're not talking about it, you can bet they're not going to be talking about it.
Yeah. I think that's really important, isn't it? I would say to our parents, it's not a one-off conversation. So we can prep for this, but actually, it's really that the prep is for you to appreciate that this is a message that will need repeating. And there are some key things, I guess, you need to communicate to children in that first sit down and tell, that I guess need repeating. But what do you think then, Christina, are the key things you need to convey in that conversation? So you've decided to separating, what you need to get across to your kids?
So I think the first thing is you need to use the word divorce. And sometimes parents, interestingly, are reluctant to use that word because they feel like it's such a big, scary word. But the truth is that's what the family's going through. And when your kids go off to school or they're talking, you know, with their coach and they don't have language to explain what's happening, that makes things more confusing for them. So you want to let them know that divorce is when parents decide that they're not going to be a husband and wife, or a wife and wife, or a husband and husband anymore, but will always be your parents. That's never going to change, right? So we let kids know that divorce is a change in the family, not the end of a family, that we will move forward.
A change, not the end. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really important for kids to hear, because they need to be able now more than ever to stay anchored in that family. And so it's going to look a little different. It's going to change, but you will always still have parents and will be the only parent you'll ever have. So I think it's really important to use the word divorce, to talk about, explain what divorce is in an age-appropriate way. I think the other thing that's really important for kids to know is, what's life going to look like moving forward? Right. Again, we're circling back to that idea of what's going to stay the same and what's going to change. Am I going to go to the same school? When am I going to be spending time with each of my parents? You know, where's my stuff going to be? What's that going to look like? Will I still see important people in my life, like grandparents and teachers? And will I still play soccer? What will happen to the dog? You know, there's just all these things.
Yeah,
that are important to kids that they're going to want to know. I think kids also are going to need to have a why. And this is really, really tough for parents.
Controversial, yes.
It's certainly. No, it is. It's huge. And so I encourage parents to think about that, and how can you craft your why before you have this conversation? Because if they don't ask it in that first big talk, it's coming. Kids are going to want to know. And understanding why, what happened, is an important part of the healing for kids. Now, the problem with why is that as parents, we tend to like fall into the extremes. We either say way too much or we say way too little. And you want to strike a balance in between those two. You want to give a straightforward, age-appropriate, non-blaming answer. And really let kids know that, you know, at the beginning of this, Our intention was to be a family. This wasn't an easy decision for us to make. And over time, some things changed for us. First, it was little things, and those little things became bigger things. And we've made the decision that we would be a better mom and dad in different households, that we make a better mom and dad than we do a husband and a wife, for example.
Yeah. No, I always say that to my parents. You've got to own it together. It's got to be a joint decision as far as the kids are concerned. And I think it really is about saying to people, we can be better parents if we live in separate houses than if we live together. And so, you know, we've decided that this is the way our family needs to look for us all to be able to thrive. It's that kind of message, isn't it? Where you're acknowledging that the parent bond isn't broken. It's the husband and wife bond that is. So I think the other thing that kids sometimes wonder is, if mum and dad can fall out of love and divorce, can that happen to them? Can a parent divorce a child? And I guess that's for younger kids, but it's kind of important, I think, to make that distinction between the love you can have adult to adult and the love between a parent and a child. Is that something you come across, Christina?
I would challenge that all kids struggle with that. You know, this idea of divorce calls into question unconditional love for a lot of kids. And so kids do wonder at all ages, you know, if you can stop loving each other, does that mean someday you might stop loving me? You know, what is it that I might do that would create a rift in our relationship? And so I think kids need reassurance that the love that's shared between a parent and a child is a forever kind of love. That's not going to change. And that's different than the love you share as a couple in a marriage relationship. So kids needing to hear things like, you know, it's not your fault is really important. And that's why the why is so critical, because again, kids start piecing together and creating a context for understanding this experience, this big change in the family. And if we're not having those conversations with them and giving them information and continuing that conversation, then they're left to figure it out on their own. And those reasons, those stories they come up with may or may not be based on fact or accurately put together.
And what happens when you've got a child that's kind of desperate to put you back together again, and you can see them trying to say things, well, Dad, if you just did this, or Mum, if you just said that, or how do you deal with that as a parent? Because I think that's quite common, isn't it, where they'll do almost anything, won't they? Because if I tidy my room, will you get back together? You hear them say all sorts of kind of quite heartbreaking things.
Well, that's when kids are really struggling. They go through a period of bargaining. That's part of that grieving and loss that we were talking about earlier, where kids fall under the assumption that they have some control, that they can change what's happening in the family. And so the way that kids go about fixing things is they might, you know, promise to be really good, promise to tidy up the room, make straight A's or great marks in school, you know, to be the best version of themselves so that parents don't have anything to fight about. Kids can also go the other direction and become an absolute handful, where you're having more discipline issues. They're acting out in school. They're getting into fights. Same kind of thinking, really. If I completely fall apart, my parents are going to have to come together and deal with me, right? So that's the way to fix the family. I just, you know, make sure everybody understands I can't function if things don't move on. I think when kids are struggling in that way, it's important for them to hear that, you know, this is a permanent change in the family, and that kids don't cause divorce and kids can't fix divorce. It's not your responsibility to try and change what's happened between mom and dad. Our problems aren't your problems.
Yeah, it's a really important distinction, isn't it? Because too often kids can get wrapped up in thinking, because as a child, you're in that sort of, I suppose, developmental stage, aren't you, where you feel omnipresent and you can do anything, be anything. And so, yeah, sometimes it does leave kids with that feeling that they need to fix things. I think it's a really important distinction you made there. Sorry, I interrupted. Go.
I think that's part of it. It's just really talking to kids about what's happening, how the family's changing. Kids also need to know that they don't have to be judge and jury, right? You don't need to take sides. You don't need to pick and choose. You get to love both of your parents as much as you want. And I think it's also really critical, especially in higher conflict situations where you have one parent who may be very determined not to be cooperative, is not staying mindful of how this is impacting the kids. You know, for children need to hear the message that if mom is upset with dad, that doesn't mean you have to be upset with dad. And if dad is upset with mom, that doesn't mean you have to be upset with mom. You get to feel any way you want, right? So we want to give them some emotional distance from what's going on between parents so that kids understand that it is not their responsibility to fix how their parents feel.
Absolutely, yeah. But and that's a really interesting thing, because that small sentence can actually really protect a child, can't it? Because it's really, particularly if you're the parent that lives with the child, they can very easily start to carry your emotional baggage, can't they, and take on your emotions and how you feel about things. So it is a really lovely way, I think, of actually resetting it and putting a bit of distance. So we are separate. We have a separate relationship with the other parent, your dad, your mom, whoever it is. And therefore that our relationships can be different with that other person, can't they? And that's really a really kind of clear line to draw for them. I really like that.
Well, I think that also circles back to this idea that we talked in the very beginning about taking care of yourself and putting the oxygen mask on yourself, that if kids don't see us managing our emotions in healthy and responsible ways, kids can easily fall into that trap of becoming our caretakers. You know, thinking, if they think a parent is very emotionally vulnerable or hurting, it's very natural for children to want to tend to that parent. And kids of divorce can very easily worry more about how their parents are feeling than how they're feeling. Right. And so behind the scenes, you will find kids are navigating so many things that just don't make it on our parenting radar that we are just completely unaware of. And that's why it is the more self-awareness we have, the better able we are to really kind of pick up on what's going on with our kids.
Interesting. So we've talked a little bit about telling the children. I guess the next phase then is how we make arrangements, child-centered arrangements for our kids. I think on a sort of intellectual level, everybody would agree that kids have the right to a relationship with both parents. That's a legal and intellectual level, isn't it? But they have a right to a relationship with both. And as parents, we have that responsibility to try and create that where that's safe to do so. How do we go about creating a child-centered kind of care plan for them?
I think the first step is to remember that how you start the journey has a very big impact on where you end up. And so once you've made the decision to divorce, then the big question is, can you set aside your differences? Can you adopt kind of this message that while we may not have been good together, we can still be great parents apart? And what we want is, you know, what is it that we want for our children collectively? At the end of this, what do we want life to look like for our kids a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And so I really encourage parents at the outset to develop what I call a guiding principle. And a guiding principle is really a very simple 1-2 sentence statement that articulates your highest values as parents. And if you can, it's great to make one together. So it might be something like, you know, no matter how we feel about each other, we respect one another as important features in our children's lives, and we are going to do everything we can to make sure that our children have a strong connection to family, right? That could be an example. If you don't have a co-parent who's willing to participate, you can articulate one for yourself. You can come up with your own guiding principle, and really what you're wanting to do is you're crafting your North Star, right? This is our hopes. These are our aspirations for what we want for our children. And when times get tough, when things get rocky, because they will, that guiding principle can be that anchor. We can circle back to, you know, this is where we started. Ultimately, this is what we're trying to achieve. And it can help you get through some of those more difficult times, because you start operating and making your decisions out of what you want for your children, not what the other parent does or doesn't do.
Yes, say that again, because I think that's a really important piece. It's not what your other parent does or doesn't do, but instead it's
what I want life to look like for my children. So children, what we really want to do is we want to keep kids in the center of the process, not the middle.
Oh, that's interesting. The center, not the middle. I like that. That's really easy to remember, isn't it? That's really good. I like the idea that you have these guiding principles. We call them goals in our process. So we have shared parenting goals. Not everyone is in that position, as you say, where you've got a cooperative co-parent. But it's interesting what you say, that you can still have a guiding principle if you're a lone parent or if you're the other parent's uncooperative in some way. And you can still aspire to that with your children. But are there any other things you can do to protect children if you don't have a cooperative relationship with your ex?
Well, I think, you know, really being clear about what your co-parenting values are is key, because that's going to guide all the decisions. So the decisions that you're making are based on what your children need at any given moment, not what the other parent is doing. And this is especially relevant, like it helps you stay the course. So it's important to be consistent in how you respond. And where parents get caught into a trap, especially with this dynamic where you have like a high conflict co-parent or an uncooperative co-parent, is that they flip-flop between nasty and nice. Like one day they're super nice and they're inviting you to come to the cinema and let's all hang out and have some ice cream afterwards. And then the next time you're getting, you know, a 2-page rant about all of your shortcomings, right? As a parent and all the things you're doing wrong and all the things you did wrong in the past. And what happens is when we get engaged in that reactive cycle, right? We're basing how we're engaging with the other parent on their actions, on their attitudes. It creates a very confusing dynamic for kids. You know, kids are wondering, why is it that mom and dad can talk to each other and be friendly one day, and then they won't even acknowledge each other's existence the other? So to keep life stable for your kids, you know, how can you go the distance? And that is by really being very clear about what your co-parenting values are and engaging with your co-parent in a consistent manner, regardless of what they do or don't do, whether they're angry, they're nasty, or they're nice, you respond and engage in the same way. I think the other thing that's really critical, we've also kind of touched on, is this aspect of validation for our kids and giving them a context for understanding their experience. When they hear things from another parent that you really wish they hadn't heard, or kids are getting exposed to adult information, to say, gosh, that must have been really hard to hear. I'm so sorry you had to hear that. Sounds like dad is feeling really angry with me. And sometimes when a parent is feeling very angry, they may say things to hurt that other parent's feelings, you know, or asking questions. What do you think? What do you think about what dad said? So really giving kids the opportunity to process with you and to feel safe about processing with you, that you're not going to be reactive when they ask the question or they talk about what they heard from the other parent. You're going to give them the space to talk about it, support those feelings. And I think you can also say things like, you know, that may be the way dad's thinking about it. That's not the way I see it. I have a different perspective. I have a different opinion.
So it's to me, what I pick up from what you've just said, it's all about learning that it's not just learning to respond rather than react to your co-parent, but you're also effectively responding, not reacting to your kids when they're coming back with stuff from a co-parent as well. And it's really interesting what you say about it being consistent, because it's so easy if someone's trying to be a bit nice to think, oh, that they've changed, I'll be a bit nice back, and to drop your guard or to react in a different way. Then you feel you go swinging right back the other way when they're then their horrible self or whatever, you know, however they normally present. And so I think it's very easy for us to want to see the positive and the good side and to want to move our own reactions along with what seems like good or progressive behavior, rather than, as you say, have a very clear set of boundaries and a clear set of responses and to be consistent for the sake of your children. It's fascinating, you know, what you're saying about that.
I mean, the trap for most of us is that we go on that roller coaster ride too with our co-parent. You know, when they are nice, we think, oh, we've turned a corner. things are going to be better, things are going to be cooperative, and we get our hopes up, and then we feel crestfallen when, you know, it all starts over again. And what happens is, you know, we just keep repeating that cycle. The only way to break the cycle is to be consistent, to stop doing the dance, right? Engage differently. And it doesn't mean that you have to be super formal and you have to be, you know, very distant and aloof with your co-parent. But it does mean that you make a decision about, you're very clear about how you want to show up for your children, and you operate out of those values, not base your actions or reactions on what the other parent is doing or their attitude.
I think that's really interesting, really useful advice. Thank you. We've talked a little bit about telling the children and about getting these co-parenting principles in place. What comes next? So how do you decide where the children are going to live and what's best for children? Are we trying to keep everything the same if there's been a parent that stayed at home, or is this an opportunity to do something different? I know all families are different, but are there some guiding principles, or is it genuinely about sitting down and working out what you can both bring to the table and how you can work a plan around those skills and attributes and availability?
But I would say that my biggest tip, and we could probably have a very long conversation about how you move life forward with time sharing, because it's a hotbed of controversy for lots of families, is that you need to really approach that conversation around, what do our children need, right? What was life like for them before we made this decision? What are some key ways that they spent time with us, that we were engaged in their lives? And how do we support that? How do we continue that? Instead of getting mired down in what feels fair to the two of us and what we're entitled to. And more often than not, that's where the conversation goes. We start talking percentages and we start divvying up children's time like it's a commodity, right? Along with grandma's china or what we're going to do, you know, with the record collection. We just throw time sharing with children right in there. And I really recommend that parents, you know, ditch the percentages, ditch talking about what's fair, and really focus in on what is it that your kids need. Again, we're coming back to that idea of what needs to change and what needs to stay the same. How can we continue to share time between two homes in a way that supports a meaningful and engaged relationship with each parent? What we want to communicate to kids is, although the marriage is ending, they are going to continue to share a life with each of their parents. And so how do we support that? The other thing that I think parents often forget is you can put so much time and energy into coming up with the perfect time sharing arrangement, the perfect plan. And guess what? 6 months from now, your kids may need something totally different. A year from now, it may be totally rubbish and you've got to, you know, go back to the drawing board. So really, flexibility over fairness is one of my top recommendations. Really focus on how can you craft time sharing arrangement, promote children feeling connected to both households as homes where they belong and they feel connected moving forward, realizing that that will change over time, because everything that your children needed before the divorce, they're going to need after the divorce.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It's with all of this, you're making very temporary arrangements, aren't you? Because life is moving constantly. Kids are growing. Anything that we do, even the very beginning, the messages that we tell them at the beginning, they need to evolve and change as the kids grow. And the same with this. So I guess ultimately what we're saying and what we're looking at is trying to create a working relationship with the other parent, some form of working relationship that will allow the growth and the continued thriving of the family. I'm conscious, like we've been talking for a little while now. So just in summary, what are the top tips then for creating that relationship, that ongoing relationship with your other parents, so that you can accommodate all of these changes, whether that's practical changes like the time spent, whether it's emotional changes as the kids develop and want or have different questions to answer? What are the tips, Christina?
Oh, goodness, there's so many. I would say top tips for starting out. First is you want to take care of yourself, right? find some way to process your own emotions. Because just as we were talking about, you can't give children what you don't have. You also can't come to developing a co-parenting relationship if you're not real clear and you're dealing with your own stuff, right? Because we need to redefine the relationship. And we're going from being partners to being parents. And that parenting piece is the connection that is going to exist for the rest of our lives. You don't just stop being a parent. And so how can we redefine that relationship? What's that look like? And so for many parents, I tell them, think about it, especially in the early stages, as you have become business partners, right? And the business at hand is raising happy, healthy kids. And so when we think about doing business with someone that maybe we don't see eye to eye with, or we don't like very much, how do we make that work? And so think about that. How can you use those skills to redefine your relationships? You get clear about how you feel, you redefine your relationship. I think also, again, get support. It takes a village. And in those early stages, this is the one thing that I see parents bypass. They go straight for, how are we going to get through the legal process? How are we going to divide what we own and what we owe? Instead of really thinking about thoughtfully, what do we want life to look like for our kids? What kind of future? What's the best possible outcome that we can imagine? Because we've made a commitment to being parents. And that truly is, no matter how long you've been married or how long you've been divorced, when you make that commitment and you become parents, it really is till death do you part. So what do you want that to look like for your children? Because you'll always be the only parents they'll ever have. And I think when we can use children as the lens for making those decisions, then the rest will follow.
Yeah, that's really insightful, isn't it? I mean, that you are always parents. And as you say, putting the children, I liked your bit, putting them in the center, not the middle. That's ultimately what you're trying to do, and creating that relationship is absolutely key. So yeah, and it's going to take some time, isn't it? Nobody really talks about that transition from parent to co-parent. It's just thrust upon us, isn't it? But there are so many things going on when you're making that transition. And it's so useful to talk some of those kind of trigger points through. But just that personal development from parent to co-parent is a really rich source. Now, Christina, it's been fabulous talking to you. Thank you so much for your time. And where can people find out more about you if they want to look more into this subject of, you know, how to co-parent children successfully?
Sure. Probably the best place to find me is at my website, which is divorceandandchildren.com. You can also find me on Instagram at divorceandchildren and on LinkedIn at Christina McGee.
Wonderful. Thank you. And you can find out more about the podcast on Twitter or by subscribing to the podcast at thedivorcepodcast.com. I'm Kate_Daly on Twitter. And thank you very much indeed, Christina, for joining us today and having a fascinating conversation about children and divorce. And thank you, everyone, for listening too.